Welcome on in to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, this is our last live show for Studio 2 in 2024.
My voice was already crackling with excitement. I know. Just saying the word Studio 2 live for the last time in 2024. Crazy.
I can't believe it. We made it through. But you know what?
Well, we haven't made it through yet.
We got to get through this show. Yeah. But this today, we thought, you know what? We're going to take a look back.
Why not?
We started this year with history being made. January 2nd, the swearing in of Sherelle Parker as the first African-American woman mayor of the city of Philadelphia. And we've had so many stories, so many things happen since then politically. I mean, 2024, huge election year. And today, another big story at City Hall right now is the vote to decide whether we will have a new Sixers arena downtown in Market East.
Starting in City Hall.
Ending in City Hall.
Oh my goodness. All roads lead to City Hall. So we're going to get into all of that today with some great guests. Our first segment today is going to be about some of the more, serious political stories that took place over 2024. And then the back half, we're going to get into some of the quirky,
filling
stories. And of course, we want to hear from you, our listener, thinking back on all the news of 2024. What were the Philly, Jersey, Delaware news stories that stuck with you? They can be serious or not, but we're going to focus on local news stories for our Studio 2 roundup today. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
And by the way, this week we did a whole show on drones. I was out sick that day, but great show. And there's some breaking news about drones today. The FAA issued an alert. The agency has issued a month-long ban on drone flights over a large swath of New Jersey,
including some spots in South Jersey. So that's actually not part of our news roundup today, but we wanted to note that because it just happened. So a month-long ban on drones, except for people who apply for exceptions in large parts of New Jersey, now in effect. Before we get into our roundup and I introduce our guests, I have
to mention
our last Studio 2 DJ
DJ. And this is a pretty big one,
I think. Yeah. So every Thursday, we allow you to pick a song to close out the show. One lucky listener. And it has to be tied to the theme of that day's show. Well, this is the last one of the year. So you're closing the year for us here at Studio 2. And our prompt, it's very broad. It's sort of mysterious, really.
Yes.
What's your personal song of 2024?
Yeah.
What is your personal song of 2024? Email us. Explain why it's your song of 2024.
And you may get chosen.
And you may get chosen by producer Paige to be our Studio 2 DJ of the day. Email studio2@whyy.org before 12:30 for a chance to be our DJ of the day.
Yeah, and now I get to introduce two of our favorite panelists of the year. We had some
great guests for the final show.
We're bringing back two of our favorite panelists of the year, and they're in studio with us right now. Had to invite them one last time to close out the year. We have Solomon Jones, columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer and a host on WURD Radio. Welcome back to Studio 2.
Thank you.
And we also have Lauren Vitas, government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter covering city council. Lauren, welcome back.
Great to be here.
Love your jacket, by the way. Lauren always brings a little spice with the jackets.
Wasted on radio.
Well, I can describe it. It's plaid, red and green. It looks great.
It's great for the season.
Getting in the season, yeah.
But exactly. Solomon, you look good too.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Wearing the classic black.
Okay, so we're just going to go through some of the biggest news stories of the year.
Yes, let's do it.
And we're going to talk about what we learned, and we're going to talk about what it all meant, and we're going to start with what's happening today. Because, Lauren, you were in city council this morning where all sorts of chaos was breaking out as city council makes perhaps its final vote to approve the 76ers arena in Market East. And when the year started, we didn't exactly know how this was going to evolve. We knew we had a new mayor. We knew that the Sixers were pushing for a decision on this by the end of the year. Studies were released. There were many protests. There was Comcast versus the folks who run the Sixers. Lots of storylines playing out. But in the end, it does appear like City Council will give the Sixers the approvals they need to build this arena right there on the doorstep of Chinatown. So I'll start with you, Lauren, first. What was going on in City Council this morning?
So City Council, never a dull moment. Chambers were packed with protesters, both in the upstairs gallery as well as the floor of council, and there was a sit-in. So at some point, Council President Johnson announced, like, hey, everybody needs to clear the floor. This is your sort of final warning. And then the Civil Affairs and Sheriff's Office came in and started pulling people off. They were handcuffed and led out, unclear whether they were actually arrested or just escorted outside of chambers so that business could start. Council President Johnson made it very clear, we do not want to kick people out. We want you to be here to have your say and voice your opinions on this, but we can't allow you to disrupt the legislative process where we can't conduct our business. And so there was continued sort of chanting and boos and cheers throughout council. When I left at around 11:15, they had just begun public comment. So the public comment process will happen, and then council will take the vote on those bills.
So it feels like this is actually going to happen today.
So, yeah. So the bills were referred to what's called the Committee of the Whole, which is made up of all 17 members of council. So when a vote in the Committee of the Whole is usually pretty predictive as to the final.
We saw that last week.
Yeah. So, and I believe it was 16 members were present, and it was
12 to 4.
Yeah. So I think what you'll see is it'll probably be 12 to 5 today with somebody who is absent voting no.
Yeah, and Solomon, I want you to weigh in on this story. Huge impact. How does this set us up for 2025?
Well, I think it is a huge impact. I interviewed several people in relation to this story. The first was Debbie Way, who was a Chinatown activist. She was very angry during that interview a few weeks back, and was talking about the impact of the arena on Chinatown. As if it is going to be in Chinatown. Of course, it's not. It's right on the edge of Chinatown. But I'm in Chinatown a lot. And one of the things that's interesting to me is that many of the people who are protesting who don't live in Chinatown, I never see them in Chinatown, patronizing the businesses, actually doing the things that would make Chinatown a more vibrant place than it currently is. There's some abandonment in Chinatown. Yeah. There are a lot of mom and pop businesses in Chinatown. There are a lot of people vending on the sidewalk in Chinatown. But at the same time, there is the framework for a great community economically. You have banks in Chinatown that are owned by people, you know, who are of that community. You have real estate businesses. You have other things in Chinatown. And so what I'm interested to see, because this is going to pass, what I'm interested to see is how Chinatown leverages what happens in that community benefits agreement in order for their community to do well as a result of this. Gentrification is going to come. Prices are going to go up. The value of the property is going to go up. How are they going to leverage what they get through that community benefits agreement and other benefits that are going to come from the city in order to make their community do well? The one last thing I want to say is that the Black community stands to benefit from what happens with the arena, given that they promised to have 40% of the concessions in the arena go to Black-owned businesses, given that 50% of the laborers, the target is that they will be Black laborers. And so I'm very interested to see what happens with the various communities in this city as a result of this arena.
Yeah.
Lauren, can I ask you, because you're such a close observer of City Hall, watching all of this play out and then it result in this vote, or what we expect this vote to be today, what did we learn about politics in Philadelphia? Because this story touches on so many things. It's about development. It's about transit. It's about traffic. It's about community preservation. Like any
political
issue,
power. Yeah.
Any issue you can imagine, it converged with this story. So what, as a political observer, do you think you learned by the outcome that we think this is headed toward?
So I think there are a couple of things that were proven by this process. Number one was the leadership role that Mayor Sherelle Parker took in it. Usually with larger development projects, the community benefits agreement is negotiated between the district council member and community members. And Mayor Parker really stepped forward and took the lead on negotiations here. So she made it very clear that the 76ers arena getting built was a priority for her. She took the reins and she exerted essentially a strong mayor tacked on it. And that's not something we've seen in many years. We've had a much stronger city council. On the other hand, I think you saw Council President Kenyatta Johnson really rise to the occasion with the process. A very controversial project. He worked closely with Councilman Squilla. They held, I think, like 8 or 9 public hearings. They made sure that, you know, this was their top priority, and they made sure that they had a very robust public engagement process. And even watching how Council President Johnson handled the protesters today, I think this, he has really kind of come into his own in leadership of this body. So I think the other piece of it, too, is that the building trades still have power. Yeah. They still have juice.
Yeah. And to be clear for folks who don't know, the building trades backed this.
They did.
Comcast, very powerful, opposed it. And, it sometimes it's reductive to say winners and losers, but look, Comcast was not able to overcome the power of the building trades here.
Yeah, and I think at some point Comcast decided that they, you know, their opposition was a lot louder and a lot more vehement earlier on in the process. And I think once they saw that the mayor was on board, once they saw that they sort of, I think, decided to pick and choose their battle. And when they realized that this was probably not one they were going to win, it wasn't worth burning more political capital.
That's a great insight. I hadn't really thought of it that way. But you're right. Yeah,
they're the largest company in Philadelphia. They want to have a strong working relationship with the mayor. You know, is it worth it burning that bridge?
When you know this is one thing that she wants.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you want to share your top story, thinking back to all the news of the year, which Philly, New Jersey, Delaware news stories stuck with you. They can be serious or not so much. You can call us 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. By the way, we got an email from Erica who says, my top story is 76ers Arena as well. And Erica says this will be so bad for the businesses and residents and other people who use Center City. So Erica, not a big fan. We had some people on Facebook also said this was their top story.
Ross is with Erica on that one.
And by the way, we're going to move on just because we could talk about the Sixers Arena.
It'll be its own show.
And it has been, by the way. But 2024, a huge political year. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania was the center of the political universe in the run-up to the big election. Big names from both sides of the aisle made multiple stops here. Kamala Harris needed Philadelphia to show up big time and vote blue for her. They did not do it. And fingers started pointing. You had Bob Brady, head of the city Democrats, pointing fingers at the Harris, Pennsylvania campaign. You had the Harris, Pennsylvania campaign pointing fingers at the Philly Democrats. People complaining about the ground game. Solomon Jones weigh in on this big political moment. And it also resulted in a big Trump win in Pennsylvania and down ballot races wins as well.
So I think that what happened in this particular race is that you saw a lot of resources being poured into Philadelphia. I had more people come to my door than I have ever seen in any
campaign
ever. And the vast majority of them were from the Harris campaign and from different people who supported the Harris campaign. And so I think that the resources were there. I just don't know that the messaging was there for Harris. I think that they did not answer some of the negative messaging that was aimed toward them. There was one group in particular that was really targeted by the Trump campaign. They targeted the LGBTQ community, in particular trans people. And they ran that commercial around the clock, around the country, and the Harris campaign did not answer that. I think that was really the final death knell. TV moves numbers in politics. I've worked in some campaigns. Radio reminds people of stuff, but TV moves numbers. And I think that particular messaging and that messaging not being answered, I think was one thing. But I think the other thing was that it was unrealistic to think that you could run a 3-month campaign and beat somebody who'd been campaigning for 4 years.
Yeah.
No matter how great your ground game was, anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that them deciding that they were going to have a social media platform of their own where they could basically take these people and just put them into this place where they would only get information from the candidate and from people aligned with him, I thought was brilliant, and it worked. And so, you know, I think Democrats have to go back, look at their messaging. And I think that they also have to decide what they're going to do going forward in terms of what candidates they're going to put up.
Yeah. And that goes to the big upsets in Pennsylvania. Biggest upset was Bob Casey losing his Senate seat. He's been an incumbent for many years, been a political figure in Pennsylvania for even longer than that. And he lost to his Republican challenger, Dave McCormick. It was a squeaker. It was a squeaker. Lauren, your thoughts on that? And he likely probably benefited, Dave McCormick, from the big Trump numbers.
Yeah, a rising tide raises all boats and a sinking anchor drags you down. No, I agree with a lot of what Solomon said. I think, you know, the Democrats try to run on a positive message, and that positive message didn't necessarily align with what many people are feeling in their day-to-day. You know, it's the economy, stupid, and you can try to tell people that, you know, our GDP is far exceeded. Nobody cares about the GDP. Most voters don't know what the GDP is. All they know is that when they go to the grocery store, it's a lot more expensive than it was 4 years ago. And I don't think that the Democrats were ever able to effectively message around that. And fear, you know, TV moves numbers and so does fear. And the Republicans did a great job playing on people's fears. Like, you know, people in Maine are worried about the border crisis in Mexico, you know, things like that. Yeah. The absolutely horrific and just shameful stories that were spread about the Haitian immigrants in Ohio. Those are the things that got traction and moved numbers. And I just don't think the Democrats could effectively push back against that with a positive messaging and hope and change.
Yeah. Before we move on, just want to mention a few other stories we're not going to get to in this segment. The University of the Arts closing suddenly
in like
this
a week.
Year and basically in, over the course of a
oh
week.
Oh, my goodness.
The big presidential debate that happened in Philadelphia.
Right across the street from us. WHYY,
John Dougherty going to prison, reporting to prison. I mean, something that would have seemed inconceivable many years ago. Before we close out this political part of our conversation, though, New Jersey, a big year in New Jersey. Bob Menendez out, Andy Kim in as a U.S. senator. The New Jersey machine seeming to take some hits, some blows, the establishment. And I don't know how much of that you think sort of filtered across the river to Philadelphia, sort of the state of machine politics. But did you guys take any lessons from what was going on in New Jersey over the course of 2024 in politics?
Yeah, with Bob Menendez, you can't beat the feds twice. That's what I learned.
That's the lesson.
That's the lesson.
Yeah. You know, two strikes are out.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have actual gold bars in your closet, you're going down. Like, you're going down.
That's the lesson.
Normal people don't have like gold bullion hidden around their house.
No. Silver, that's fine. Copper, you're good. But yeah, gold.
But gold bars and cash? No. Yeah.
Let's get to another big political story this year. And this was Sherelle Parker's mandate that city employees return to the office in person. This really came to a head over the summer. And Parker said this was really part of her plan to revive Center City post-pandemic. Let's hear a little bit of her rationale.
I made a decision that I stand by firmly. And that is in order to make good on that promise to you that I needed Philadelphia's municipal workforce to return to office to provide valuable supports and services to you, the taxpayers of the city of Philadelphia.
There you have it, Sherelle Parker. So return to office. Just in general, Lauren, your thoughts on that? You're in Center City all the time, and where you think all of this is headed. Clearly, Parker has made up her mind, but the municipal workforce is a small sliver of the total workforce. Your thoughts on all that playing out, but just sort of what it means for Philly going forward?
No, I mean, I think if the mayor is going to ask businesses to send their employees back to office, she has to lead by example. And so I really do understand why she did that. I think it's challenging because as the city struggles to attract workers and talent, that's a big thing that might keep somebody from applying for a city job. But when you look at the city of Philadelphia, we rely significantly on office workers to pay the non-resident wage tax. So this is not just about, you know, it being good for workers and good for customers. The city needs workers to return to Center City for its tax base.
But is it going to happen, I think, is my big question now.
I mean, I think, you know, this is very anecdotal. My cousin, you know, during pandemic, work from home.
Whenever you bring up a cousin,
you get to work from home. He bought a house out in, you know, back home in Scranton, and then a year later, it's like, we need you back in the office. So really? I think it's something that you are seeing across the private sector as well. I think there's been some flexibility has been injected to it, but I think companies realize the value of having folks in the office, both from making sure people are performing, mm-hmm. but also in terms of building, you know, building teams and just being effective. So I think, you know, the mayor's decision was, mm-hmm. again, her showing that she is a strong mayor. She is not afraid to make people unhappy or angry about mm-hmm. her choices. And then yeah. she's going to stand by them wholeheartedly. So,
and I wanted to get your comment on that because she was unflappable on this. I mean, yeah. there was a lawsuit.
Yeah.
People complaining about the comeback to work, mm-hmm. complaining desks were dusty, all sorts of complaints. But yeah. she did not shift at all.
Well, I think that there's another element to this, too, and that's safety.
Yeah.
There's safety in numbers. When you go downtown, you don't see a lot of people. And I think that's part of what needs to happen in order to revitalize downtown. You've got businesses failing. You've got stores failing. You've got all kinds of stuff happening. Guards getting stabbed in Macy's, like, you know, just mm-hmm. you need people in Center City in order for Center City to work. Now, I think that that's going to change going forward because I don't think we're going back to where we were before the pandemic in terms of foot traffic and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But
new
you
normal.
Absolutely have to have people in Center City.
And that's what we have two more stories that we want to get to. Safety is a big part of it. Yeah. And I got to mention the homicide numbers. Homicide rate down, lowest has been in more than a decade, 38% decrease over last year.
Here also, in Philadelphia.
Here in Philadelphia. Shootings also down, yet this past weekend, 24 people shot, mm-hmm. right? 4 people dead in a spate of shootings over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that? I mean, because we had this huge spike in gun violence and just crime during the pandemic, and now it seems to be dissipating. Lauren.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that had to do with people's mental health during the pandemic. Yeah. You know, everybody was just sort of frayed and on edge. And I think a lot of the shootings we have are split second decisions where, you know, it would have been a fist fight, but there's guns.
Yeah.
And I think that from what I understand, that's sort of what happened at the Christmas Village shooting yeah. this past weekend. It was just teenagers and somebody made a really dumb decision and you know, now someone's.
Yeah. But that gets to the question of like why, right? So Solomon, so mm-hmm. the instinct for politicians is we did this, we take credit. Although I will say we had DA Larry Krasner on our show, and he said basically like this entire up and down cycle of violence in Philadelphia is proof that what politicians do really doesn't affect these numbers very much. They sort mm-hmm. of happen on their own cycles. I mean, what do you think? Is there something that Philly is doing right? Is this just sort of like the ebb and flow of violence that we've seen for decades in Philadelphia? What's your take?
So I think there's a couple of things. I think, one, there were no guardrails during the pandemic. And it goes back to that safety in numbers comment that I made earlier. When you don't have people outside, well, the only people outside are the people who are up to no good, right? And so I think that allowed for people to kind of do whatever they wanted. And you see kind of the vestiges of that now. Look at the way people drive, right?
Yeah.
As if there are no police, there are no lights, there are no stop signs, there are no rules. I believe it's a leftover thing from the pandemic. Now, why did the violence go down? I think it's a number of things. One, I think it's the community agencies that are working mm-hmm. every day with people around gun violence. I run one of those as a volunteer,
Man Up
PHL. And, you know, we work with these people in order to try to steer them away from gun violence. There are people in other organizations, violence interrupters, people who work in schools, people who work with adults, people who put them in job training. The city has invested in that. And so I think politicians can take
some credit.
But I think also there's a change in the way that policing is done. I think they're looking at the hot spots rather than just throwing people up against the wall. I think they're looking at where this violence is coming from, who was involved in it, and focusing on them. I think that makes a difference.
By the way, Justin's top takeaway from 2024, also sort of on this safety sort of a thrust here. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for the progress and momentum that we're seeing in prioritizing pedestrian and bicyclist safety in public spaces and infrastructure development. And before we close this segment, just want to mention briefly, because it sort of ties into that, SEPTA funding was huge this year.
The
it looked
cliff.
Like SEPTA was going to hit this fiscal cliff. In the 11th hour, the governor comes in with some flexed money from the state, and we'll see where that goes. in the next year. Yeah, but many other stories we could have mentioned.
Yeah, certainly. We got to mention quickly the Kensington cleanup, you know, new deputy commissioner there, first Latino to hold the position, business curfews, all sorts of things happening in Kensington. There are a number of other stories that we did not get to, but 2024, big year.
Big year. And by the way, if you want to be our final Studio 2 DJ of the day for the year, get those recommendations in very, very soon. Our producer, Paige, is telling us the time is now.
It's so ticking.
The prompt for Studio 2 DJ of the day is, what was your song for 2024? And tell us why. Studio2@whyy.org.
Yes. And we are, again, talking about the top local stories of 2024, and we're about to dig into the weird ones now.
Yes.
And if you if you have any you want to share, you can also email studio2@whyy.org, and we'd love to hear your voice at 888-477-9499. And we are closing this segment with Before I Let Go. Philly native Frankie Beverly died this year at the age of 77. Rest in peace, Frankie Beverly. We'll be right back.
This you can bear. You strip right beside me, yeah, and I won't forget. And I really love you. You should know. I wanna make sure I'm right, girl.
Oh, welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2's Year in Review. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And today, we are revisiting the top local stories of 2024. We ran down some of the issues that were most impactful to the people across the Delaware Valley. And now, we're turning to the weird and wacky.
Oh, yeah.
These are the stories that could only happen here in Philadelphia.
So I'm going to reintroduce our guests and then introduce a very special new one. So our two guests so far have been Solomon Jones, columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer and WURD host, as well as Lauren Vitas, government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter covering city council. And now joining us in studio for the rest of the hour is Stephanie Farr, who writes about what makes Philly weird, wild, and wonderfully unique for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Stephanie Farr, welcome on into Studio 2.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
By the way, I now follow you on X, and you are a journalist. And I love that. I love that. So let's dig into the wacky and wild. What's your wackiest story that you wanted to start with? And I had on my list, by the way, the portal.
The portal.
Should we start with the portal?
Yeah, let's I think we should start with the portal.
Let's remind folks what the portal is, because it sounds ominous if you don't know what it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like the device out of Stargate if you're a big science fiction fan. And it is a video art installation that connects people around the world. It's silent, though, so you have to connect through just motion and movement.
And looking at people, yeah.
And looking at people. And I think the strangest thing about the portal is that after 2 months, we still have it. I think when it first appeared in Philadelphia.
I expected a very, very quick international incident.
You guys expected Hitchbot, but you got a different outcome here. People are actually taking to this thing, and they're communicating with people. What, it's Dublin, Lublin, and Vilnius, I think, are the three cities.
And Lithuania,
So, yeah, you have Ireland, Poland, and Lithuania are the countries, And people have not only not destroyed it, much to my surprise and gratitude, but they've really embraced it. I spent 5 hours there one day, and it was some of the most joyful hours of my 2024.
Yeah.
I watched Philadelphians dance with strangers in other cities. There was a guy in Lithuania who held up a Go Bird sign for us, and the entire crowd went wild. And then somebody showed up in a pink satin bunny suit with a parasol and then did the mummer strut in front of the camera, which I'm sure really confused people in Poland.
By the way, I was able to finally visit the portal. I went to the Christmas village as well. And it was just kind of cool. We were all I felt really silly, though, because we were all just, like, really just waving at each other.
Yeah. Couldn't think of anything more beyond the wave.
I was like, hi. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the challenges, right, is how do we communicate? What are some silent methods of communication that we can use? And I saw a lot of people playing rock, paper, scissors with people in other countries, goodness. Which was really cool. Throwback, yeah. So,
Lauren Solomon, have you seen the portal? You've been to the portal?
I was afraid to go to the portal.
You were
afraid. Because I thought that, you know, Philly, I know our folks. Philly. I know our people. You know what I mean? I didn't want to be out there and be embarrassed. It wasn't like a physical fear. It was like, man, I'm going to be embarrassed if I go. Y'all are going to do something crazy. But to my surprise, it's still there. It's great. So I'll stop by.
All right.
Yeah, it was cool.
It's right outside your office, basically, Lauren.
I swung through. I was, as I said, I was expecting like the State Department to have to get involved at some point. I was pleasantly surprised at how mundane it was.
Okay, so I think the next story we have for you, Stephanie Farr, is it just says here, Single Dave. Who's Single Dave?
Oh, yeah.
Is Single Dave still single is the question.
Ooh. I got an update.
Please, wait, explain the story and then update, please.
I'm
so
excited.
So this was a gentleman from West Philly, David Klein, who took out a billboard in Gray's Ferry, a dating billboard, for about $1,100. And he just put a picture of himself up and a very large picture of his cat with him. And it said, Dave is single and want to go on a date with Dave. And then he gave some fast facts about himself on the billboard, including that he can cook, has normal hobbies, owns a cat, and that he bought a billboard.
Yeah. One of his normal hobbies is buying billboards, apparently.
I mean, it's a disposable income flex right there.
Yeah. I mean, what I really love about this story, and my colleague here has been covering it, is that he didn't buy the billboard initially to as a dating method. He just wanted to make people smile. He wanted to just kind of put a picture of himself up. And he's like, well, let me make it a little more useful. So I love these people who bring this random joy and break us out of our everyday. Every day in Philadelphia, and Dave Klein was one of those.
By the way, he was inundated with DMs.
So many.
We got to mention that. I mean, he did get DMs. He went on some dates.
Yeah, thousands of DMs, at least 20 dates. Some of them sponsored by like Four Walls Whiskey, which is the brand from the guys from It's Always Sunny. And went on the Drew Barrymore show. Like he blew up.
Dave was on the Drew Barrymore show.
Yeah. So this went around the world and you know, got international attention. But I did follow up with him this week for my year end story.
Drum roll.
Do you want to spoil it or not? It's up to you.
I'm happy to. I think he'd be fine.
This is breaking news on Studio 2. Folks.
Go right ahead. Breaking what happened news. With Dave?
Dave is still single.
Oh, no.
There is no hope for the rest of us.
Oh, no.
I was certain you were going to say he found love.
No, I know. I was a little bummed. But, you know, Dave is young. He's 28. He's got time.
And Dave could be picky. We don't know. Like, you
That's
know.
True. This could be a Dave issue.
I don't know. I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it is. But, you know, people, you got to have standards. You know what I mean?
Dave is 28 with money for a billboard. Yeah. Dave is going to be fine. Let's just be clear.
You're like, Dave is good. Dave is good.
So I've got, what do I have next here? I'm like, I got something called, it says, Stephanie, it says Scrapple Sculpting.
Oh, yeah,
Scrapple. Which is, that's a tongue twister. Scrapple Sculpting. Yeah. Scrapple Sculpting. What's Scrapple Sculpting?
So this happened in October. The Reading Terminal Market, in advance of their inaugural Scrapple and Apple Festival, held a Scrapple Sculpting contest, wherein they gave contestants, 10 of whom signed up. They had to turn people away from this contest, mind you, which is surprising. They gave them all 5-pound blocks of Scrapple and a set of clay carving tools, and they had to create something within 90 minutes out of a 5-pound block of Scrapple.
90 minutes? That doesn't seem like that
and
much time.
I'm looking
time.
At some of these images we have on our screens up, and it they did pretty well.
They did amazing. I mean, it was really, really impressive. There was somebody who had an MFA in sculpture there. Yeah, I know.
finally putting that degree to use. Take that, mom and dad.
There you go.
This whole thing feels like it violates some commandment. Like, I'm not sure which one, but this is against some law of God.
Right, and scrapple is a method that they use to not waste food.
That's
it's all
true.
The parts of
yeah.
a pig that,
true.
You know.
It's a saving food type of food.
Didn't
it's
really
a gray good. Meat. I just want to put that out there.
But you're not from Philly.
It's a gray meat.
I know.
So I ate scrapple coming up. I did eat scrapple.
My daddy's from South Carolina, so we did eat scrapple, but it's a gray meat. So I just leave it there.
Yeah. Do we say who won? Or
but it looks cool, like carved.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the sculptures included a Philly pretzel with salt specks on it. We had someone make the Rocky statue, someone make the clothespin. But the winner was Jake Heller, who he made a chicken vase with a removable head, put an egg inside of it so that it was, once again, reusable. Now, here's the thing about Jake. He actually won the Cheesemonger Invitational earlier in the year.
That guy? We talked about that guy.
We did talk about that guy.
And despite winning the Cheesemonger Invitational, he said of the contest,
Jake is talented.
I know, he is. I feel like my life has really come together and led to this moment. Everything I worked for has really been for this. Not winning
higher.
I'm having a brainstorm here. Yeah. I feel like we could have some sort of collab and crossover between Jake and Dave. You know what I mean? Some sort of Jake-Dave crossover. It makes sense in my head. Four letters.
He could sculpt a thing of Dave, then we could put it in front of the portal.
And so he can meet somebody.
He could date a Lithuanian woman.
You know what? This is the kind of conversations that need to be had. Because we're going to find somebody for Dave. That's we have not given up on Dave.
Right. 2025 is Dave's year. I feel it.
And so let's move on to something. Another story. The fake Eagle endorsements. Mm. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
They showed up at SEPTA on like the SEPTA bus terminals or the little waiting areas in the city, and they had Kamala Harris on there, and everybody thought, oh my goodness, the Eagles are endorsing Kamala Harris, but it was not. Try to explain that to Stephanie.
Well, that wasn't my story, and I was actually away on vacation at that time. So.
Okay.
I'm gonna demur a little bit, but I do remember. You know, it seemed to be an artist eventually took credit for it. Mm-hmm. I believe.
Yep. A guy named Winston Tseng. He claimed, by the way,
yes.
that he didn't actually put them up. He just made the art, and he doesn't know how it ended up at bus stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
You're not buying it.
No, I'm not.
Joke.
See, this is why I was afraid to go to the portal, because I know the kind of stuff that we do. You know, so he makes these posters and somebody puts them in.
It was a commentary on.
And he's made commentary on a number of people
as true.
Well. Yeah.
It was a commentary on sort of political endorsements and why we care about them. You're still not buying
it. No, I'm not buying it at all, because you had to interfere with somebody else's property in order to do that. They had to interfere with SEPTA's property in order to do that. They had to take out the ads that somebody else paid for, right? And then put those over the ads that somebody else paid for. I would feel some type of way. If it was my ad, you put that over my ad, oh, I'm angry.
And people
you're giving
believed
me my money
it
back.
Because it was where you would normally find advertisements.
That's right.
And a couple people got dragged on social media for retweeting it, thinking it was real. So,
Well, also, the Eagles logo is on everything. I was driving in Delco yesterday, and it was on the mixer of a cement mixer truck. And
it can show up anywhere.
I'm like, where am I not going to see this? I mean, it's got to be on a coffin somewhere.
My goodness.
I am sure. At least one. By the way, Lauren, did you believe these when you saw them go up, or did you think this is for sure a prank?
I didn't think they were real, just because you're not going to alienate half of your fan base.
Yeah.
Or one third or two thirds, however many Eagles fans out there.
It's a lot.
I didn't think it was real, but I thought it was very well done and well executed.
It was. So let's move on to another one. And I believe you did bring this one to us, Stephanie Farr. It just says Wawa Guy.
It doesn't narrow it down at all.
There's a lot.
That could be Jake,
that could
Dave,
be anybody.
That could be anybody.
That could be anybody.
Can you tell us about Wawa Guy? Is that enough of a prompt? Do I need to give you more of a prompt?
It is.
Wawa Guy.
This is Tyler Garrison, and he went viral this summer maybe? For he had collected every single Wawa order slip number from 000 to 999.
Okay, wait. So like when you order a sandwich
at
Wawa, it'll be like your order number 168 or something like that. You're telling me this guy got every single one of them?
Yes. How do you do that?
Well, he told me he eats at Wawa 3 to 4 times a day, which, look, I eat there like 3 to 4 times a week, and that's excessive. But 3 to 4 times a day. He also recruited some friends. Anybody who, you know, would go to Wawa, he'd ask them to bring their order slip with them. And then he would go into the basket. You know that little discard basket at the counter? Yeah, he was taken through there.
Is that honorable? Do we believe that was honorable for him
not
to do
all.
That?
Not at all.
Oh, again, I'm okay with
but that. But he collected 999 of these. There's still some honor in that.
I just can't wait for them to like read his will and like one of his great grandkids gets like the Wawa collection when they think
they were like, thanks, Grant.
They thought they were going to be able to pay for college. And
no,
instead,
that could be worth something, Lauren Vitas, the Wawa slip collection. So what did you make of this story, Stephanie Farr? The fact that this guy was able to do it, you know, it is, I think it's an accomplishment. No?
I think it's a weird flex, right?
Right.
Because I've run into a lot of Wawa fans, and I don't know anybody who would go that far. I mean, he has a second mission, which was actually his first mission, which led him to this, which is to take a picture at every Wawa in the country. There are more than 1,000 Wawas now.
Is he
getting paid for this? So yeah. Wawa needs to hire this guy. Like, right. And if he actually gets hired, then it would have been all worth it. But it's like, he's like the Wawa ambassador.
Right. I mean, when he posted the picture, because what he did was post the picture of all the slips on Twitter, and that's what really went wild, because it looks like a quilt or a blanket. It's so big. And the CEO of Wawa said, I think this means you get my job now. You know, so, I mean, but all they did, I think, was send him, like, a gift basket. He did
that's
say.
It?
That's it.
But we could do more than that, Wawa, yeah,
I think.
That
feels like a shorty for life situation.
Yes.
Yeah, at a minimum. And yeah. He needs a beverage with that, like yeah. One of those teas. Mm-hmm. By the way, 3 years it took him to do this, yeah. And I'm like, dude, what you could accomplish if you focus that energy on something, because that's a huge accomplishment.
He did accomplish something. He got every Wawa slip.
But I'm just saying, like, that type of energy, like, right. He could put that on anything.
That's mm-hmm. true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
So we'll look for him for a role in the next cabinet.
I know. you never know.
You never know.
You never know.
You truly never know. So this next card just says, I don't know, Stephanie, if you can make sense of this or not. Animals on the loose.
Loose. With an exclamation point.
Just says animals loose. On the loose.
Oh, yeah. I prefer lamb for the pun factor, but...
were there a lot of animals on the loose this year?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. I've been doing these weirdest stories of the year pieces, year-end pieces, for, you know, several years now, and every year it seems we have I have a category with animals on the loose. I mean, it started this year in February where... a horse that had just arrived at the Fletcher Street Urban Riding Club escaped and ended up first on Kelly Drive, then on 676, and then on 95.
Whoa, it hit every single major artery. That's incredible.
It really did. Yeah, yeah. But it didn't stir up too much trouble.
Stir up. By the way, I just have to say this because you did a pun, and yes, your second pun. By the way, that's two strikes. Lauren Vitas is a citywide pun champion. Yeah. That is
reigning
real.
Pun champion of Philadelphia.
That is
wow.
Real.
Yeah.
Lauren,
did they give you a crown?
No.
They need
not.
To. Did they give you anything?
I got a t-shirt and $50, which I proceeded to promptly spend at Oscars right after the show.
Did you spend it at Wawa?
No, I did not. No, okay.
all at Oscars.
I spent it all at Oscars.
Yeah. So, but great pun. So this horse was...
It got loose, yeah. They think it may have been, you know, somebody was messing with the stables at night and got on the highway, you know, caused some traffic jams for a while, became some social media memes. Our great team at the Enquirer, they made a computer game out of it. I was really impressed by that.
Wow, creative people over there.
Yeah, and because it was a new horse to the facility, the kids who go there to learn how to ride got to name the horse, and it was between 95 and Freeway. And so, yeah, now his name is Freeway, and he will be forever connected with his heyday.
Yeah. Wow.
Any other animals that we should be aware of that were on the loose this year? That was the big one for you.
Well, there was a raccoon who ran onto the field during a Union game.
I remember that.
The,
yeah.
The photo is amazing. If you haven't seen it, you've got to look it up. This raccoon's face. He is just living his best life. And they were able to capture it with a trash can, which is very appropriate.
There was also a great call. Like, the announcer who was calling the game did a great, like, play-by-play of the raccoon running around the field.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's probably the most exciting thing that happened in a soccer game.
Oh! Sorry, soccer fans.
By the way, we didn't even mention this, but one thing that happened this year was we got some more details on Philly in the 2026 World Cup.
Which was another big story.
That was a big story. So get your soccer.
I'm a soccer fan. Okay. The joke was
and by the way, soccer has brought Messi to Philadelphia twice at this point.
So Lionel Messi?
Yeah, exactly. So
not messiness, but yes.
No, but yes, the biggest soccer player in the world. And so that was pretty big deal with soccer.
Yeah, very big.
Keeps you awake.
Yeah. We have a July 4th World Cup game.
It's a long game without a lot of...
That's why you need raccoons.
Oh, yeah, you need them.
That's why you need the raccoons.
We'll give that suggestion to FIFA for 2026. How about that?
One raccoon.
More wildlife, yeah.
By the way, I wanted to, speaking of escaping animals, had to mention the pig. The 300-pound pig named Dorothy who made it to on the Schuylkill Expressway about a mile until somebody pulled over, gave a little pig some water, and like helped her to the side.
I mean, oh my God.
It had it's a curly-haired pig. I mean,
it's adorable.
I don't know about adorable, but like, yes, it was on this Google.
How are these?
Pretty animal.
Some people do love pigs, though.
They are cute.
I wouldn't say, yes, you know what?
Maybe not. I guess I have a soft spot for pigs. I never realized that until now.
Dorothy just
won me over.
I just don't understand how all these animals are like instinctually finding on-ramps to major highways.
I can't find my.
I know.
I get lost all the time.
Exactly.
But the
Science
pig made
to
it.
Look into that.
Nature finds a way.
I have one more. This was not a Stephanie Farr one, but this was I think this was just me. It says Phillies, but I think what it's a reference to is the fact that the Phillies, they had a season, of course, in 2024, and there were some highlights and some lowlights, but they also played a lot of games wearing the colors yellow and blue. How do we feel about that? They have these alternate jerseys.
Terrible.
Terrible. We all hate
horrendous.
Them.
Terrible.
Every single one.
Connects were garbage.
Yeah, so these are called City Connect jerseys, and they were yellow and blue this year to pay homage to the fact that Philadelphia's city flag is yellow and blue, if you didn't know.
Light blue,
but not that blue.
It's Swedish.
Right, right. Yeah, give them the backstory. Why do we have a yellow and blue flag here?
Because of the Swedes. I
think that's right.
Yeah, it's right. But like, I don't know why we're like holding on to this. Particularly when it comes to our sports teams. The old Eagles used to have. They had the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets throwbacks. Those were also yellow and blue.
But that
I can understand. These colors were just terrible. The font was terrible.
It didn't grow on you at all.
It did not. And then Real Muto looked like a banana in his like yellow catcher's gear.
Oh my goodness.
It felt like we were the evil team in like a softball adult league comedy movie. Like we were like the corporate team that was
in
trying
sluggers.
To try,
sluggers
yes.
too.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to take down the ragtag fun loving guys. Yeah, they were terrible.
Solomon, you did not like these uniforms.
Very ugly uniforms. And I've got some Phillies gear. You know, I like the blue. I like the red. I like the gray. I like the white. I like all of it. I like the pinstripes. And so there have been many Phillies uniforms. I've liked all of them except this one. This one feels like it's like a failed hip-hop experiment with that font. That's what it looks like. It's horrible.
I will say I did see one Phillies fan improve upon them, and I'm not sure if I can say this on the radio, by putting the... colloquial name of a very famous building on the back
of
the jersey.
You cannot say that. Google it, kids.
Yeah.
Google it. Really?
It went viral. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That made it fun.
I'm sure Alex Bohm appreciated it.
Oh,
wow.
You got close.
So close. Dancing on the line.
Boy, I'm going to transition real quickly and mention that a couple other fun stories this year that Stephanie reminded us of. Robert De Niro attended an Eagles tailgate as part of the election crush. Remember that?
I remember that.
De Niro at an Eagles tailgate. And
Bill Murray
bartended at Bob and Barbara's here in Philadelphia this year.
Yeah. That's my local. So I live like a couple blocks away. And my friend Katrina met him at the Phillies game. And she runs Bob and Barb's with her brother. And they took him back. And I was like, I've never been madder at a person in my life.
And you did not get a call?
Not getting a text.
Wow.
What?
Yeah. I just like go online the next day and I'm like, oh,
Yeah. And we found out about this because crew members of the band Guster happened to be at Bob and Barbara's that night and tweeted about getting served by Bill Murray.
Wait, so Guster was in town playing a show?
This is like a Gen X Mad Lib.
Wow.
I like Guster. So members of the band Guster tweeted about the fact that Bill Murray was at Bob and Barbara's being the bartender for the night.
Right, yeah, pretty much serving, they don't call him City Whip, the special there. Serving up some Jim Beam and PBR.
Yeah, wow. And actually, now that we mention it, we lost another local legend this year, Butchie, who was a longtime bartender at Bob and Barb's, recently passed away.
Yes, I saw that story.
He was a staple and a very dear friend. So next time you guys have a citywide, please pour one out for Butch.
Yeah, we'll do. That's a nice place to end it as well. Yeah. So we've covered
happened in 2024. Comedic,
the poignant, the political. We've done it all during this hour. Let me, should I thank our guests?
Thank our guests.
Man, you guys were awesome. Yeah. That was so much fun. So Stephanie Farr, of course, writes for The Enquirer about all sorts of weird, wacky stuff happening all across the region.
And first timer to Studio 2. Welcome. Yes. We hope to have you back. You were great.
Yeah, I'd love to.
You're allowed to steal the mug, by the
way. Also, thank you to Solomon Jones, columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer and host at WURD Radio. And to you, Lauren Vitas, government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter. You guys are great. We appreciate you being on our year-end review.
Should we do it again in 2025, guys?
Let's do it.
I think some of these stories are going to be up again.
Oh, well, I'm think sure. 2025 is going to be weirder.
Yeah.
We'll need a Dave.
Dave will Dave still
update.
Be single.
Yeah. By the way, we have an announcement to make before we go, major announcement.
So, starting on January 7th, 2025, Studio 2 will be live on YouTube. Our studio has been renovated and we have a full video streaming setup. So now you'll actually be able to see Cherry and I do the show every day.
Yeah, you'll also be able to see our guests, which we're doing a rehearsal right now so we can see our guests, but you will be able to see our guests both in studio and remote. And you'll be able to see visuals of the news items we discuss and other media that we reference.
This is a huge moment for Studio 2 and WHYY. It really is, as we continue to expand our digital reach. And I just want to thank all the members who are making this possible.
Yes. And you can subscribe to WHYY's YouTube channel today. You can catch us live there beginning Tuesday, January 7th. I am truly, truly excited because this is something we wanted for a long time.
Yeah.
And now we get to reach our listeners and viewers wherever they are.
Yeah, and then YouTube's really cool. You can comment on YouTube. You can reach us that way. So if you don't like sending in emails or calling, you can be on YouTube. You can see the show through a different lens, but I think you can also just hopefully we can reach a new audience, and I'm really, really excited about
it. Yes. By the way, DJ of the day.
This is Patricia,
mm-hmm.
who nominated Kendrick Lamar's All Right. Patricia says, I play it often as a reminder that no matter what's going on in the world, in the city, in my own little neck of the woods, everything will be all right. Patricia, thank you so much for the nomination. You are our final Studio 2 DJ of the day. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andrea Scopes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer.
Welcome, Mike, to the team.
Yeah, Mike. Al Banks and Tina Calliquet engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCoury. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager.
From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, signing off for 2024, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolf-Manaren. Talk to you next year.